Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of Great Story. With me here today is Daniela Levy, my mother. Say hi to everybody who is listening.
Hi to everybody who is listening.
Okay, so you moved to Israel when you were a kid because you lived in America before.
That's right.
So could you tell me about what the experience was to move from America to Israel?
Sure. So I was about your age when I moved. I was in fourth grade, so I was a little younger than you. Mm-hmm. And I was born in New York, but the first home that I remember was in Pittsburgh, which is where I grew up, and that's where we moved from. So that was like the only house that I remember. We had this nice big house in Squirrel Hill, and you know, it had a nice big yard, and it had I had a room for me and Yonit, but then I had my own room. We had a lot of space. We had a basement, and we went to a Jewish school that was like right up the street, like a 10-minute walk. Mm-hmm. And we had a really nice community there, and I had a lot of friends. And I was like the top of my class, you know, I did really well in school. But it was very important to Saba and Safta, my parents. They really wanted to move to Israel, and they had always planned to move to Israel even before I was born. So they were sort of planning on that for a long time, and then it finally became possible when I was about 9. And the move was very hard because, you know, I didn't speak Hebrew. I had been learning Hebrew at school a little bit, but it's not really the same
as being fluent.
Right. See, you've been speaking Hebrew since you were very little.
Since I went to kindergarten.
Right, because you heard people speaking, but I didn't. So yeah. I had to really learn it as a new language, and I came in fourth grade, you know, not really being able to understand anything that was happening in class. So I would just sit there, and, you know, I couldn't really understand what was going on, and the teacher wasn't really able to help me, so I just sort of sat there, and I would bring, like, English books along, and I'd sit there and read, because I had nothing else to do, I was so bored.
Yeah, were you at least good at math?
I was good at math. And I was able to kind of, that math was pretty much the only thing I could still do in school because, you know, it's just numbers.
Yeah. And the numbers look the same.
Right. So it was also hard because I had to make new friends.
Yep.
And it's hard to make friends if you don't speak the language.
I know what you're saying. There are many people in Israel that speak English.
That's true. So really my first friends in Israel were people who spoke English either because they had moved here from somewhere where they speak English, like England. I had a friend from the UK or
Italy.
Well, Italy, they don't speak English. They speak Italian.
I know.
But I had friends from...
There are people who speak in an Italian accent here.
That is true. So my first friends were people who spoke English, and it took me a while. It took me a few years before I was really able to make friends with kids who only spoke Hebrew. And even then, usually I would always kind of gravitate towards the English-speaking kids, kind of like your brothers do. Mm-hmm. You know, they prefer to be friends with American kids. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what it was like for me also, even after I was already fluent in Hebrew.
Yeah. So, was there anything interesting that happened, in the middle of coming here?
Yes, I can tell you a story about when we first arrived. I didn't know what our house was going to look like. So, you know, I knew that for the first month we weren't going to live in the house that we were going to live in. We were going to live in this kind of basement that was underneath somebody else's house. But I didn't really know what that meant or what it looked like. And so we came to the place and I saw there were, it was like, it's hard to describe. There were like two houses in this lot and like they're kind of facing each other. And I, you know, on the one side was this beautiful house with this lovely garden and everything. And I was sure that that was going to be the house that we were going to live in. So me and Kobe, you know, your uncle, we sat on the steps and waited for our parents to come and move us in. And as we waited there, somebody came up and said, hi, you know, what are you guys doing here in English? And we said, oh, we're moving here. We live here now. And this person was a little taken aback because she was like, oh, but I live here. And it turned out that we were actually moving into the place across the, you know, across the lot. And she kind of gently pointed that out to us and sent us on our way and had a chuckle with it, a chuckle about it with Softa afterwards. And they're still friends with my parents, the people who lived in that house.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there any other details?
Well, I can tell you something that was really cool for us when we first came was that everything here was kosher. You know how, like in the States, yeah. Not everything is kosher.
Yeah, it's so annoying.
Yeah, so for us, like we were used to it being annoying and used to not being able to eat anywhere. And here, we knew that we could come, we could eat at places like Pizza Hut, Burger King, and it was super exciting. So like the first day that we were here, we went and we ate pizza at Pizza Hut, and we had burgers at McDonald's or whatever it was, and it was very exciting at the time.
Kosher McDonald's.
Yeah.
I am 99% sure that that Israel is the only place that has kosher McDonald's. There is very few.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Because it's like an afterthought for McDonald's.
Yeah, I think that there's no other place in the world where it makes sense for them to have a kosher chain, yeah. Because, you know, it's not easy to keep kosher and you know, most people want cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers.
And even here in Israel, there are places, there are branches that are kosher and ones that are not kosher.
Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot from my friend that people have made burgers out of like plants and stuff and it tastes exactly like a burger, and they added more things to make it react exactly like a burger.
Yeah, you know, we're lucky to live in Israel because there's this whole industry now of people who are like reinventing vegan food. They're both that they're making like these meat-like things using like 3D printing to print steaks and stuff that tastes like their steak, but they're actually made of plants, and they're also like growing lab grown meat. Like they take cells from cow meat, and
I heard from my brother. He told me one day, at a random time, that people have managed to take one single cell from an animal and then put it in this machine and then have it reconvert and turn into a big piece. And then if they wanted to, they could take a cell out of that and then they could repeat it. And basically they'd only take one cell for an infinite amount of meat.
Yeah, and it's really cool because here is a place, I think there's more vegans per capita, if not in Israel in general, than like in Tel Aviv. There's a lot of vegans here, a lot of people who care about animal rights and who also, you know, think that for health reasons and to save the planet, we shouldn't be eating so much meat. And it's very exciting because they're inventing all these really cool things.
Yeah. There was also an ad it's an animal rights ad in disguise, basically. So it's basically of all these chickens in a like locked up in this thing, and there was a chicken who was born outside of there, and then they brought him in, And so then, like, of course it was animated. So, like, when the door opened and the guy came and
this started... This is the ad you told me about this morning that I haven't seen.
And he started saying the racha, that you say before you slaughter any type of animal.
Mm-hmm.
Any kosher type of animal. And then the chicken interrupted, and then he got every single chicken to basically saying we need rights and stuff, like things like that.
I see. Well, you know, kashrut is just one thing that is really interesting about being Jewish in Israel versus living in America, and you've experienced this also when you have visited there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause when you're in America, then it's like you're a kind of small, weird minority. When you're there, do you notice, like, if people sometimes kind of stare at you or look at you funny?
People do that when I'm in Israel too, but this is very similar to my teacher in English.
Mm-hmm.
One time, I did mention this in a previous episode, the first one. He just was walking around in America doing this thing, and then a person walked up to him, talked for a minute, and then basically my teacher told the person that he was a Jew, and here's the words that the other person said. What? You're a Jew? You people actually exist?
Yep. So, obviously, when you live in Israel, nobody wonders if Jews are real, actual things that exist. So,
yep.
Like, also, I remember living in the States, like, when it was Christmas time and Valentine's Day and everything, like, everything would always be...
Oh.
According to kind of, you know, the non-Jewish holidays and stuff. And
people would wonder why you're not celebrating it.
It just felt kind of weird, you know, because, like, all the Santa stuff and whatever. And even though, like, I went to a Jewish school, so I wasn't, like, exposed to that in school. But, you know, you walk around in a mall or just anywhere, you know, and it's, like, really in your face. And you just feel weird because it's not yours. But when you live here, it just feels very home, right?
Because like there's barely any of the there's only Jewish holidays that people celebrate. If you were a goy, and you saw thing of Rosh Hashanah, then it'd kind of be the same for if you're in America. Because they don't celebrate the same holidays that we do.
That's true. Yeah. So for someone who's a Christian or a Muslim who's living like in the Jewish society, it probably feels kind of weird to be surrounded by all this Jewish stuff all the time.
Yeah. Like if you see a poster, just you know, in the middle of the sidewalk, then like that says go buy apples and honey at this place when Rosh Hashanah is in like a day or two, then it's not weird if it's here. If it's in America, then it's extremely weird.
Right. Like, so it's nice
like people think honeys and apples.
I think most people who live here, or at least as part of kind of the Jewish community, are kind of aware of what that stuff is. But I think in Arab cities and stuff, they do kind of concentrate more on either the Christian or the Muslim holidays. And in any case, it's good to be aware of kind of what other cultures are doing and celebrating, so that, you know, you don't think that you're the only person who exists, or the only kind of person who exists in a place.
Yeah, well... That conversation went in a weird direction.
Yes, it did.
Anyways.
You want to talk about something else?
Let's see. Can you tell me a story about one of your dogs?
One of my dogs. Let's see.
Like, you did have a few dogs.
Right? I have had, yeah. So I had, I guess, two dogs. I feel like they weren't exactly mine because I was already kind of grown up by the time my parents adopted them. Mm-hmm. The first one was Kazi. We got him as a little puppy that was like this big. Mm-hmm. And he was so cute. Oh my gosh. He was so cute. But he was such a pain. We had to keep him in a little pen in the, in the mamad, the safe room at the, on the bottom floor of the house. And one of us had like Kazi duty in the morning. We would have to go and clean out his cage because he would leave like poop everywhere until he was properly potty trained.
So you'd get another cage and you'd put him in that cage.
No, it was a kennel. We had to go in there with spray and clean it out.
Yeah, but how would you get Muzzy out?
Kazi. We would take him out. It was fine. But he grew into this giant black dog who was so sweet, but he was also a little territorial. So when people would come in the house, like, sometimes he would kind of attack them.
And like, in what way? Like,
he would go after them. There was one time that he bit somebody and then it was bad and, you know, she was kind of hurt. And then my parents had to, you know, get rid of him. They actually sent him to a friend of ours in the States who took him, and he had like a big farm and he was able to live out the rest of his days in glory and happiness running around.
Like a rag doll.
Yeah, he was, he needed a lot of space and he didn't get it, at that house. But he was very sweet and he gave the best hugs. And then after him, or maybe it was at the same time, I don't remember, we had Bagel. So you remember Bagel?
Yes, Bagel. She lived very old.
Yeah.
17?
17. I don't remember. She was like a really tiny, very nervous. I always used to say about her, she has just two emotions, joy and fear. And yeah. She kind of was very frazzled all the time.
Yeah. She's also nervous a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She was. She died.
Yeah. She died, and then Sab and Safta got Humus, who is the best dog ever, I have to say.
I can throw toys and he is the perfect mix,
I feel like, of the two of them, I guess, or even maybe not even the two of them, but he's kind of mid-size, but he's calm and sweet, and he's like so high strung. Yeah,
but you can also play with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's nice.
Yes, but we actually had cats than we had dogs.
I remember the last cat.
Calvin.
Calvin, how
he was the super fluffy one. He was very old too, and I think he was like 17, I think, when he died.
That means Calvin is older than Bagel.
We got him. I don't know how it works out with the, but I mean we got him. We had him long before we got Bagel, but you know how we got him. Is he was a tiny kitten that Yonit found near her school, and she put him in her backpack and carried him home. And he was like so cute and little. And we already had a cat at the time, Chino, who was very unhappy about this whole situation. And he started like peeing everywhere out of protest. And eventually, you know what Saba did?
What?
He relocated Chino. He took Chino to like a faraway place and like let him out and then drove away. And he did this without telling us, and we were all so mad. But I have to say, and I'm sure that he will listen to this
you told
I have to say it was probably the right thing to do. Because yeah, it was
yeah, we couldn't. You were really secretly glad.
Yeah. I have to admit that. So yeah. You know, when we were little, we had guinea pigs also. Did I ever tell you about the guinea pigs?
I only knew that Grandma had a guinea pig.
So Yonit got a guinea pig for her birthday when she was 8. And I thought it was really great, so I wanted to get one too. And and my dad took me to a pet store without telling me that he was going to get me one for my birthday. I was like 6. and he took me to the cage, and I really liked small things. Like, that was, I liked little tiny things.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that there was one guinea pig, one little baby guinea pig, who was so small that he had to climb into the food bowl to eat. And I thought that was the cutest thing, so I wanted to hold him. And then my dad said, okay, we're getting him for you. And I called him Blackie, which was short for Black Beauty. But Saba called him Black Magic because he was always really hard to catch. Like, we couldn't take him out of the cage. Yonit's guinea pig was much nicer.
Yeah.
His name was Gingy. And you know, he would, like, let you hold him, and he was chill. Mine was, like
scratch you, and, like, ragdoll!
Yeah, but they were really messy, and a lot of... It was hard to take care of them. My poor mom had to clean out their cages all the time. And there was one time, you know, my Uncle Kobe was very destructive when he was a toddler, and one time when he was mad, I think, he went into our room and, like, took out all they had, like, these cedar chips at the bottom of the cage to catch all their poop and pee and stuff, and so he spread it all over the carpet on the floor there, and my parents had to clean that up. So, I imagine they didn't want guinea pigs after that.
I am... terrified.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
That it? Of that question?
I guess.
Okay. So, could you tell me or us a story about your school? Like, certain thing that happened?
This is a hard question.
We can skip it if you want.
Yeah, I went to a bunch of different schools.
First one off the top of your head. Or the first one that you went to.
And I can't really think of any story that's specifically about the school.
Okay, so.
Have you, like... Were there any interesting stories about, like, how you met Abba? Like, was it very interesting?
Do you know how we met?
I know only one part of it.
Okay, what part of it do you know?
I know that you guys met, through those things that message the people.
Sort of. So there was this website called LiveJournal.
LiveJournal.
And it's what existed before Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all these
other Twitter
things.
Twitter and Booblehead.
Yeah, all those things, yeah. So LiveJournal was this site where you had, like, a personal blog. You know what a blog is, right? Not exactly. So a blog is, it's like, at least what it used to be, it was... or a personal blog is like a blog, it's almost like a journal that you write in about things that are happening in your life and things that you're thinking about. And the thing about LiveJournal is that you would write these things, but then you also had a friends page where you could read a bunch of other people's journals. And then, so then you could, like, friend people, and then you would read what they were writing. So I found Abba because he had just made Aliyah and someone mentioned him in a comment somewhere. And I thought, oh, that's cool, like, he just made Aliyah by himself, you know, I'll friend him. So I did. And then, for a long time, we were just sort of reading each other's journals, or not really. In his case, he wasn't really reading what I was writing, because he didn't think it was that interesting. But he also, like, I first thought, you know, well, he's, like, the right age, and he's, like, religious, like, maybe we could date, but he... did not think that at all, because he thought I was so much younger than him. I was 3.5 years younger. That is not a lot at all. But for some reason, he thought that was a lot. Anyway, I mean, I guess I was still in Shirut Lumi, so he thought that, you know, he was already, like, past college, so that seemed pretty young to him. But anyway, what happened was we kept kind of commenting on each other's stuff a little bit, and then I had a friend who got married to the son... of one of the rabbis who taught at his yeshiva that he went to. And so I asked him, are you going to be going to the wedding? And he said that he didn't think so, but maybe we could meet sometime for coffee or something. So we decided to meet up. And then nothing happened. And I just sat there for 3 weeks being like, was that a date? I don't know. We never, like, said it was a date, but we actually had a really nice time together. And, like, I don't know. And I was agonizing over this the whole time. And he was kind of like, didn't think about it, and then, like, looked back on it, like, probably making noise with that pillow there. And then he looked back on it and was like, oh, yeah, I probably should have asked her out again, but now it's too late. Oh, well. And finally, I was still obsessing over this, and finally I decided to send him an email where I asked him, like, hey, that was kind of fun. Should we, like, go out again? And he said, yeah, we should. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yes.
He was also the first man I ever dated. Did you know that?
I'm not surprised.
Why are you not surprised?
Just knowing you.
Knowing what about me?
I don't know. Everything that I know about you. I didn't know that. I'm just not surprised.
I see. Okay, you got any more questions for me?
I've got a list here. Let's see. What
was your favorite thing to do when you were, like, say, 6 to 10 and things like that?
So, like, before I met Aaliyah.
Yeah.
So, my favorite thing to do was to play pretend. I love to imagine things and make up stuff, and I had this whole world of imaginary friends, some, like, imaginary pets. I had, like, a horse and a kitten and...
Like, you named every single one?
Yeah, and, you know, they were, like, my friends.
That were hard.
And I think later that kind of evolved into me making up stories and then eventually, you know, becoming a writer.
Yeah. And then somehow you started working for MyHeritage.
Right. That's my current job.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yep.
It's nice. It's a nice job. I mean.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
I like that every single year you just get some free stuff, like you did, like for school.
Mm-hmm. They give you free school supplies.
Yay. Mm-hmm. Well,
he's making a weird puppet with, like, a blanket that we have here. You obviously can't see because you're only listening.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi. Well, so...
Let's see, I think we have about half an hour. That's a decent podcast length, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe we should...
Wrap her up?
Wrap her up.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the 5th episode of Big Great Story. And, well, that's it. I hope you had a great time listening.